see it your way, on the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out, we can work it out. Think of what you're saying, you can get it wrong and still think that it's alright. Think of what I'm saying, we can work it out and get it straight.
Alright, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And we have a four-pack of Brewer tickets to give away to caller number two this coming Monday against the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, that's, you know, rarely do we see the Dodgers.
I love Pee Wee Reese. Is he still playing for them?
No. Well, no, Maury Wills was the guy. I was, he could barely hit his way out of a paper bag, but he was always on base.
Yeah,
you know. But anyway, the Dodgers are going to be here. You get a shot at four tickets, and if you won last month, it's a new month. You're eligible again. So. Doesn't mean that if you won last week, which was a different month, you're also eligible to do it again. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. And if you haven't gone, the seats are absolutely spectacular. They really are. Caller number two will be able to receive those tickets. Sandy, wanted to talk. There's so many things to talk about now. Let's talk about the debt ceiling. And I think sometimes that the American people don't really understand that. We always, every year it's the same thing. Oh, the debt ceiling's coming. And yet they're able to work it out normally. Always able to work it out. They're probably going to work it out this time, too, because what is the real penalty and dangers, inherent dangers that we are faced with?
The unbelievable aspect of the debt ceiling dispute every time is that we're simply arguing about whether America is going to pay its bills. Because, it's not that we're arguing about whether the government can pass new legislation that'll cost more. The debt ceiling is all about the cash flow that's required to pay the things that Congress has already approved. So it's just it's an argument at the federal level, the public congressional level, almost every year about whether the government is going to pay the bills that have been created by Congress's action. It would be extraordinary. It would be un-American, for that matter. From the standpoint of work ethic, to not pay your bills. And so the notion that somehow the American public sees fit to allow its representatives to have this argument just belies the notion that we understand what's going on. I think most Americans think that this is all about whether the government should pass new legislation that costs money. No. It's all about whether we'll incur the debt necessary to pay the bills we've already authorized. And so, maybe we should have a discussion about how we spend money in the future, but we shouldn't do it by holding hostage the creditors of the United States of America as to whether they'll get paid.
You know, Sandy, to tie in budget cuts, money that has already been, agreed to, it's kind of a difficult thing to do, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, you're holding hostage the notion we're not going to pay our bills until you agree you're going to spend less money. Well, those are two different issues, really. Paying your bills is something that just ipso facto you have to do. And if you don't do it, there's dire consequences.
That's the point. That's the part of it that I think the American people, because it's always been done, the dire consequences that just mentioned that may impact each and every one of us in some way,
shape,
or form.
If we fail to pay our bills all the way to the point of defaulting on Treasury instruments, the U.S. dollar can kiss it good. We can kiss the U.S. dollar as the world currency goodbye, all right? Because half the reason that it is the world currency is the world finds it very safe to invest in U.S. Treasury bonds because it's the safest instrument that has a yield on it that you can invest in the world. Oh, maybe it isn't, you know? And if maybe it isn't, now we've got a problem. And so the whole notion that we do this and that politicians hold their head up and talk about it is like putting a gun to our own head, okay, and saying, I'm going to pull the trigger on this and I'm going to kill us if we don't change future policies. There are better ways to have the debate about what we do and spend in the future. And the way to do it is not to take a hostage, okay? This is like taking the American creditworthiness hostage, putting our arms around it from behind, holding a gun to its head, and saying, unless you do X, whatever it is, I'm going to pull the trigger.
But Sandy, I guess for the life of me, I just don't understand why we come to this point at this point in time almost every year. Is there any way that we can get to a point where we don't have to deal with this?
Well, sure. We could, you know, there could be something passed that would say that basically the debt ceiling will automatically increase to pay the bills that have been incurred by Congress. I mean, that's not a very difficult concept to put in place. And so, you know, something else ought to be considered if Congress is going to be irresponsible in the way it presents itself to the public. Because it's pretty awful to watch if you're a creditor of the United States to watch this process ongoing, because, you know, you have to worry about whether someday some fools in Washington won't ultimately get to the point of defaulting. And if they get to the point of defaulting, you know, we should understand that what happened to Greece could happen to us.
You know, and going back to Greece, what, 5 years or so ago, or a little bit longer?
Yeah.
Just kind of saw the bottom fall out.
Well, yeah, Greece basically defaulted. And the point, and they got saved by the European Union. Who's going to save the United States? You know, we don't have anyone to step in and save us. But you know, the who's going to be grinning on the sideline is the people who don't want the U.S. dollar to be the world currency. I mean, we talk about China and whether we're worried about China getting primacy in the world. Well, why don't we just hand them primacy by defaulting on our treasury instruments?
So, Sandy, I want to move now to the United States Supreme Court and whether or not the ethics are there unwritten ethics for the Supreme Court, Sandy, or has it just been something that we just, you know, have grown accustomed to?
The problem is that we have these three prongs of government, right? The Supreme Court, the legislature, and the executive. And so we don't want one of these pillars to be
in
control of the other, right?
Right.
So the Supreme Court keeps asserting its independence and saying, you aren't going to tell us what to do, because if you can tell us what to do, then we aren't independent anymore. Now, there is an argument as to whether the Constitution provides that the Congress has the capacity to regulate the courts in certain manners, not substantively, but in other ways. So it's possible that there could be the power of Congress to create ethical standards for the Supreme Court. But why in the world would a public body like the Supreme Court not simply adopt its own rules of ethics? You would think that the Supreme Court, which dictates ethics in many ways to the United States at large, why they wouldn't adopt a system of ethics which would be public, and why they would not have transparent requirements that would cause the justices to have to be transparent about their transactions so that they would build trust in the Supreme Court. The most important currency of the Supreme Court is the United States' trust in the neutrality of that court and the capacity of that court to make decisions that are not compromised. And so what do we have with Clarence Thomas? We've got, it's unbelievable. I mean, there isn't a judge in this country who wouldn't be embarrassed to reveal to the public the nature of the kind of support that he has realized from private gifts and support. His wife's earnings, his steps, I don't know quite
great, what. Great-nephew.
Great-nephew's tuitions. You know, he did report a $5,000 gift he got from someone associated with that great-nephew, but he decided not to report the gifts that he got from Mr. Crow and the other gifts from Crow. And, you know, maybe this is the tip of the iceberg. I mean, I have to applaud ProPublica for the extent to which they've been digging this up.
And to say, well, tell this wealthy benefactor, don't put my wife's name on this money he's sending her.
Right. That was Leonard Leo, the guy that's the Federalist Society.
So Sandy, I mean, clearly, you got to ask the question, why is he receiving all of these gifts? Because he's Clarence Thomas? Just because he's Clarence Thomas?
Well, I think Justice Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
Probably you have to put the title before the name to understand fully.
The power, right.
Fully why it's happening. I mean, you know, the history, without going into all the facts about Clarence Thomas, the same smell that occurs when you look at Hunter Biden and the amount of money he was getting for being a board director, and people want to make a big deal out of that. This ought to be at least as notorious as that in terms of the level of discussion we have about it. And we ought to be requiring that our justices be transparent about the things that they do that might compromise their thinking, okay? And most judges would be reluctant to even take a free lunch from a lawyer.
So Sandy, the worst part about all of this is people are saying, well, they're doing this because he's Clarence Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas, and he's more conservative. This is the reason why they're attacking him. Is that the reason?
Well, I don't think so, because I'm confident that if a liberal Supreme
Court
justice...
Hold on, Sandy. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. But... at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy. So Sandy, we were talking about, Clarence Thomas and the Supreme Court and the fact that they're basically, there's not a whole lot of oversight. And once you get on the Supreme Court, do they just assume that you're this justice and you know, maybe there should be some oversight. I guess that's the debate, right?
I think transparency is
transparency
would create public oversight. It would create the capacity for reporters to more easily than ProPublica was able to dig up all this stuff on Clarence Thomas to see what's going on, right? So that, you know, now there's an assertion that Ruth Bader Ginsburg during her life took 185 trips abroad or something. But, you know, they haven't suggested that they were financed by third parties. I think Ruth and her husband, her husband was a very successful lawyer. I don't, you know, I think transparency is the key. The only oversight we have now is the power of the Senate to impeach and try under impeachment a Supreme Court justice and remove them. I just was looking it up. Samuel Chase in like 1804 was a Supreme Court justice impeached. He was unsuccessfully impeached when he was a senator, and then he must have been a notorious character. he and Donald Trump should meet someplace. But you know, I think that this really opens up a can of worms, and I don't know what happens to Clarence Thomas out of this, but I certainly hope that what comes out of this is the Supreme Court doing what it should do, which is adopt its rules of ethics and create transparency and public filings that allow the public to become, because there is no question that the public's confidence in the Supreme Court is eroded. It's eroded now because it's viewed as a much more political entity than it used to be viewed as. So instead of viewing it as a place where things get decided purely on the basis of law and fact, it now is viewed as a place that where things are decided on the basis of politics, law and fact. And we needn't have it be a place where the public believes that it's determined by politics, law, fact, and private interest compromises.
You know, Sandy, it's just getting to a point more and more in this society that the government is not to be trusted. We've had it. We've heard it before. You hear it out of Donald Trump's mouth and others who follow him. The government can't be trusted. And to some degree...
Oh, I think it's true. I mean, I think that the government has lost its moorings with respect to ethics. I think that the fact that almost every person who goes to Congress comes out of Congress much richer than they went into Congress opens the issue in your mind as to how did that happen and why. And yet it seems to be almost universal. I just think the level of ethics in Washington has dropped to the point where everybody is pursuing ways to make money on the side. Sometimes it's books, sometimes it's memoirs, sometimes it's speeches to various groups, all different ways to make money on the side. It's appointments to boards of directors. But it's funny, but people in power in Washington tend to get quite a bit of net worth increase during their period of power, and we ought to worry about that.
So, Sandy, if you say you think it's true, and the others who say that, and clearly at the key to all of that is what Tom from L.A. always says, we the people are the government, and we the people don't trust our government, how are the people to ever get back to a point of trust in the government? You know, it's going to continue to erode, barring some miraculous...
Well, transparency, you know, that sunshine...
But they're not going to vote in transparency.
Well, yes, Congress is not doing much to block the benefit of private interest money in government, right? So why are we going to get rid of Citizens United by action of Congress? No. Are we going to have a constitutional amendment? No. But the Supreme Court is a very vital institution. The rule of law in the United States is imposed better in the United States than it is in almost any country. And we should understand that in probably a majority of countries in the world, the rule of law does not prevail. And where it doesn't prevail, government fails, okay, completely. We have private interests. You have oligarchs. You have you know what we would criticize about Russia. Well, yeah, Russia's a place where it's influence, not law, that has a great deal of power. We don't want that to happen in the United States, and the Supreme Court is the bastion against that. Okay, and if the Supreme Court loses that, I mean, if it gets compromised, Netanyahu is trying to compromise the power of the Israeli
yes.
Supreme Court. You can see it everywhere. If someone wants to be an autocrat, what they can't tolerate is a Supreme Court that's independent, okay, and uncompromised. And what we need in the United States is a independent, uncompromised Supreme Court, and we better wake up to that, and they better wake up to that. Justice Roberts better realize quickly that what they need to set up is public, transparent rules of ethics.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. We'll be right back. You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's, you know, still Friday. Sandy Williams is still here. Sandy, man, Iowa governor will sign bill rolling back labor protections for children. What are we doing?
You know, it's appalling to me. You know, the thing that happened during the New Deal with the Fair Labor Standards Act and child labor, you know, this is back to Oliver Twist and Charles Dickens, and you know the idea that 14-year-olds, that even 14-year-olds would hold 8-hour-a-day jobs. What about school attendance requirements? You know, what about the truant officer? But does the truant officer go to the place of employment and say, "No, you got to go to school"? I mean, we're going backwards. And yes, we have labor shortages, but we've got millions of people on the shortages. We've got millions of people on the border who are willing to come and do that work, and plus the fact we have stagnant population growth in America absent immigration. We apparently have a shortage of workers. We have a very small population. The cohort of people who are age 18 today is a small cohort compared to the prior generations. You know, what are we doing with immigration? I mean, why are we blocking immigration? And instead of allowing immigrants to come in, taking children and threatening their scholastic development by allowing them to work at age 14 and to be exploited. To work where? I mean, at Hormel, at the Hormel meatpacking plant?
Yes. Yeah. Sandy, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds on Thursday said she will sign a bill to roll back labor protections for children, allowing them to work longer hours and take jobs that have been prohibited because of physical dangers. Sandy, I don't care if you're a Republican or who you are, and you don't like what's going on at the border. How do you somehow reconcile that this is right? Well, and they're doing this in different states across the nation.
How do we think that employing 14-year-olds full-time in industrial capacity jobs is going to be good for future generations? You know, we're not developing, you know, I mean, it's really, like I've said, the people today can't seem to think beyond tomorrow, you know, and how can a governor sign that bill be viewed as thinking about the future? They aren't thinking about the future of that 14-year-old.
You know, the measure would permit children as young as 14 years old to work in roofing, construction, and demolition. Provided they are part of educational apprenticeship programs and a parent has granted permission for the work. They would also be allowed to do light assembly work and assist customers and businesses that sell fireworks as long as no machines are present. Sandy, I don't care about any of those things. You stated 14 years old should be in school, period.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, if the business can't find support for its business, you don't punish children, right?
Well, and, you know, the guys here is that they're into some kind of a training program, but kids to be trained for that kind of work can wait till they're done with their,
yes,
with their basic schooling and move on to it at a stage in their life where they're now ready to move into the job market. You know, what they're basically training here are people to get ready to drop out of school, I guess.
Well, yes. And as you stated, what does that do for their future?
Yeah.
So we take advantage of children at this age because that's what's happening, right? A child that young can't, is not, what did he say, the front lobe of the brain doesn't develop until your 20s. If you're putting a child 14 years old in that decision-making situation, well, I need some money right now, I'll do this. Sandy, our nation is in free fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, Sandy, these things are being proposed, and governors who are saying yes to this are Republicans. And you just wonder, the measure championed by conservative lobbying groups, the State Restaurant Association and the State Industry Group for Home Builders and others, man, you can't find, like you said, people at the border.
Well, the nifty thing about 14-year-olds on internship programs is they don't get much pay, yeah? So I suspect that there's a dual interest here. I mean, they've got a market for employees, and they can pay them probably very minimum wage because they're in a training program, right? I mean, that's been the ruse across the country, this whole internship, build up your resume. There's all kinds of jobs out there in the American economy, particularly in the service economy, that are taking advantage of young people now who need to build a resume of experience by being interns and being in training. And I would fear that this has the smell of that as well. So, you know, I just think we give too much lip service in America to being interested in our children.
Yeah.
And we don't really show it. And this is another case of that.
A law passed in Arkansas in March eliminated work permits and age verification requirements for workers younger than 16. What? So you don't even want to verify that the child.
Wow.
It's Sandy, we've lost our minds.
Well, this is expedience.
The proposals have also been introduced in Minnesota, Ohio, and Georgia. It's across the board. Wisconsin legislators on Monday introduced a bill to allow children as young as 14 to serve
alcohol.
Sandy, explain that one to me.
Yeah, that one's isn't that nice? You know, so we want our 14-year-old boys and girls to be in beer halls and bars, places where we don't necessarily want those people to be, and they can be serving alcohol, but you dasn't touch it. You dasn't drink it, but you can serve it.
You know, Sandy, the people before us who set these laws into motion.
Yeah.
What was different about them than those of us today who these people thought all of these things through and they've worked, right? They've been good for the American people, for children, for the development of children who eventually wind up becoming adults. So what were they seeing differently than what the people of today are seeing?
It happens all the time. The private interest comes forward and says, you know what, things were different then. We're different now. The people are different now. We're more honest. That's like the banking industry in the 1990s. We don't need the Glass-Steagall Act anymore because it's different today. You know, we're all different. You know, how are we different? The rules of human nature still apply, greed, whatever. But it always seems to work. The argument always seems to work because people always want to believe that the vices of the past don't exist today, that we are going to defy the rules of human nature. We no longer have the vices that they had, and we'll behave the way we ought to behave. And then when you lift that legislation in about 5 years, everyone realizes, oh, I see why we didn't allow children to work without work permits, you know, as we see 9-year-olds being exploited.
You know, Sandy, the other part of it is none of these people want their children who are making these laws.
Yeah.
They don't want their children doing that. And I guarantee you their children won't be doing that. But others, yes. And you, as you stated, Sandy, wouldn't the simplest answer to this be all those people waiting?
Well, the people
you've got them.
The people waiting at the border and the,
are willing to work,
and the families that require that their 14-year-old go to work because they have no money. There ought to be we ought to be addressing that family's needs in a way different than simply opening the door to their child to essentially go to work in such a way that their future will be capped by the nature of their work at age 14.
So what are your thoughts? Because I've heard people say, well, people work on farms. Kids worked on farms, and they were young, mm-hmm. and they were this, and they were that. And I said, well, yeah, but it was family.
Right.
Right. Isn't there a difference?
There's definitely a difference. Yes. And people work on farms today when they're very young. And people work at home, you know.
Yes.
Scrub the floor.
Yeah, but
mow the lawn.
Not working outside of their own families.
Right, exactly. It's just different. To take yourself into a work environment with people of all ages, with people who are adults, and to work next to adults who are not your parents, to be in an environment that is dangerous for you, it just... You know, the child labor laws that were enacted in the 30s, when you read about it in the 50s, you thought, my God, they needed to enact laws to keep kids from having to work in textile factories and getting, you know, hundreds of kids burned and die in a textile factory fire. And, you know, it's a wonder that we forget the rules of history and the lessons of history, and we go ahead and we do this kind of stuff. But this seems so elementary. It's unbelievable.
You know, Sandy, I got this. I had the pleasure of speaking, I think it might have been a week or two ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, at a memorial celebration for unionized workers who have died in all these different places. Who was it? The entity that was created to protect workers, OSHA.
OSHA.
And OSHA was there, and mm-hmm. they spoke, and then I got a chance to speak. And they were talking about what it used to be like before these laws, right,
yeah.
were enacted. And I saw the difference where I worked. But, Sandy, children, 14 years old as a child.
Well, first of all, children aren't as capable of controlling themselves as adults, right? Because
right.
that frontal lobe, children are more likely to make mistakes. Children are more likely to stick their hand in the press machine.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, the fact that there might be rules of safety at work.
Construction.
Doesn't mean that a child of 14 is as safe as an adult of 25 subject to the same rules, because everyone knows that children make mistakes. It's part of growing up, right? It's part of and what you hate about the notion of growing up is that children would be put into a place where they would be really endangered by the mistakes that they will inevitably make.
You know, Sandy, it really does bother me that this is coming and it's happening. And it's not even good that they have immigrants, undocumented immigrants, working in these tough places. It's not right that it's a 14-year-old undocumented person. But now you're even saying, okay, what's good for the gander is good for the goose.
Yeah.
We don't even care if it's an American citizen. We need people to work. Well, I was reading something the other day where it said, The major business corporations are starting to ease up on, well, you had a marijuana conviction many years ago where automatically it locked you out of being able to do any, mm-hmm. you know, getting hired to do anything. Now they're starting to realize, hey, the guy smoked some weed. He had some weed.
Well, I'm all for businesses making more sensible the restrictions and requirements they put on people they're going to hire, so that they don't have unreasonable education. You don't have to have a college education
right.
to do
this is what's changing.
Any and all things, and that's good. But But I think as well, we ought not to simply cater to the needs of the employers by saying, you know what, Katie, bar the door. You want kids? You think kids can work for you? Sure, you can have kids. You have a textile factory. You need a bunch of kids to work there. Sure, so long as they're in an educational program.
All right, listen, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Sandy Williams is still here. Let's go to Mike from West Bend. Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts, man?
Good morning, sir.
Yes.
You have a good show, as always.
Well, thank you.
My comment is this, and of course I'm, you know, in my 70s, but my friends' sons now and the grandsons are all union tradesmen and are getting out of training, and they're going out west, mostly Denver, because the commercial projects are federal, and federal has a rule of a drug test every 30 days. And I think it's a good test. I don't think marijuana or any drug mixes with on-the-job sites. And it irritates the people out there because they're forced to hire union labor, which, in my opinion, is the only labor that should be out there anyways. But if you want the job done, right? But I was almost killed by a guy high on marijuana. So, no, they don't mix, and I don't think they should change any rules.
Well, does alcohol mix?
Now, there's another issue. We had guys on the job.
We know people drink alcohol, right? On breaks.
Right. But I'll tell you what, Earl. Our union had a guy, they ended up firing him. I mean, we gave him a 30-day dry out. They sent him to these assessments. And if you don't make it, you don't make it. But it's too dangerous of a job.
I'm a guy who worked in industry. And did I smoke a little pot? Yes. Were there guys drinking on the job? Yes. That's the way it was. That's the way it is now. But you can't go ahead.
Earl, that might be true in certain factory jobs and this and that, but when you got the iron workers out there and we're laying pipe and we're building a big building, there's nobody drinking on the job where I work.
Well, no. Well, here's the difference. Iron workers are a little bit different. But we're talking but you can't just isolate it solely to iron workers. It's unions across the board.
Interestingly, you've got a situation in Colorado where the use of marijuana is legal. It's as legal as alcohol. And so, I mean, clearly the use of alcohol on the site of any job is, I'm sure, against the rules, regardless of...
Except for when Miller and Pabst, you could drink.
Yeah, except if you worked at a brewery. But clearly, no one would disagree with you, I'm sure, that on-the-job use of any of those things...
Should
be prohibited. But in Colorado, I'm confident it's difficult to sustain a rule that would, for instance, allow the testing of hair follicles to see if someone has ever used marijuana, because you ought to be testing their liver to see if they've ever used alcohol in the same circumstance, I guess. I mean, do you see the difference there?
Before I go?
Huh?
Can I add one more thing before I go?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had friends come down from out of state and from up north, and they never knew that the Brewer Stadium was changed to American Family name.
Okay.
And they were all union guys. That was union built. And now it's named by a company that hates all union.
Who hates all unions?
American Family.
Oh, so I don't. That's...
What? So did they? Yeah,
but I'm just saying it was. It was ironic. That's all. It was just kind of funny.
Hey.
Well, anyway, good show.
Hey, Mike, I enjoy listening to you guys all the time. Hey, man,
yeah.
Mike. Thank you. Thanks for listening, man. Let other people in West Bend know we're here. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy. Man, I love what we do, and the fact that we have such a diverse listening audience. Right. I mean, people from across the state.
Absolutely. I thought our conversation today with, is it from Eden, Wisconsin?
Yeah, Eden, right.
Jim, I think it was. You know, I think it's important to hear and talk to people who think differently, right, who see things differently. And one of the biggest problems Milwaukee has is this urban-rural viewpoints. And the more we can talk to one another, I think the more we can reach agreement, maybe the less likely we'd have this loggerheads with the state legislature and the Milwaukee County City situation.
Because, again, people are people. And the conditions that exist in Milwaukee, similar to the conditions that exist in Eden. People are just trying to make it through. They're the same and they're different, right?
So, and I think it's the differences that people have to come to understand so that they can better project the situation, right? So, you know, it's from the very beginning. There have been problems between the urban dwellers and rural dwellers. But the more we can bring those people closer together, the more likely it is we can solve problems.
Well, because in the end, Sandy, they're both just trying to make a life, just trying to enjoy the time that we're here and do the best they can for their families. That's the same across the board,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. So my view is that I think very few people operate out of malice. Everyone thinks they're doing the right thing. And we just have to talk to one another and figure out what the best right thing is.
Yeah, it really is. And, man, you know, cherish and relish, you know, your and my relationship and the fact that we're able to kind of come on these airways and listen to people.
Mm-hmm.
And with your vast knowledge and respond to them and in a way that they probably haven't heard before. And there's a lot of value in that. And so, you know, we talk about a myriad of things. We certainly talk a lot nationally about what's happening nationally. But as we saw today, sometimes we may forget the local part of it. And I think that's, you know, the part of it that we need to focus on a little more.
Yeah, well, you know, the show for me is a great opportunity to learn and listen, and it's great to be able to talk with you. You and I come from different backgrounds, and we're able to be best of friends. Sort of.
So, what did the county executive say? You need to look out for me.
I said, Tim, I keep my eye on you. Like, that's my assignment for the week for the weekend, I guess.
So we got to go. We'll be back on Monday. Sandy, it's always a blast. Thank you, Calvin. Who won the tickets?
Our winner today was Elpidio Gertler.
I'm not going to try to repeat that, but congratulations to that guy. Everybody enjoy the weekend. It's going to be great.
This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes.